In the late 1990s, the abduction and murder case of popular singer Pai Pingping's daughter Pai Xiaoyan rocked the headlines all over Taiwan. The lifeless body of the 16-year-old girl was discovered in a drainage ditch approximately 2 weeks after she had gone missing. When she was found, her body was severely mutilated and badly decomposed. During the autopsy, evidence of sexual assault and rape was detected. And what added to the distress was the fact that ransom negotiations persisted for days, even after the girl's death. This tragic news put the entire population of Taiwan on edge, as the people knew that a killer and rapist was out there. The Taiwanese police immediately launched an island-wide manhunt, with strict orders for the police to employ lethal force without prior warning if the suspects displayed any form of resistance. Their search was focused on three individuals: Lin Chunsheng, Gao Tianmin, and Chen Jingxing. This trio was accountable for the abduction and murder of Pai Xiaoyan, along with a disturbing array of other criminal activities, which encompassed additional kidnappings, murders, and rapes. The orders given to use lethal force were not taken lightly. The police were acutely aware that these three men were likely heavily armed and prepared to use deadly force against anyone who stood in their way. As a result, the officers knew that a dangerous encounter could erupt at any moment, and they were indeed compelled to open fire if the situation demanded it. And they did. On August 19, 1997, Lin Chunsheng faced 6 gunshots from the police while attempting to flee. Reports say that in his final moments, Lin summoned his dwindling strength to turn his firearm upon himself, ultimately ending his own life. The shootout resulted in the tragic loss of an officer's life and left another grievously wounded. Chen and Gao, on the other hand, eluded capture that day, even though the police had mobilized a force of over 800 personnel to scour the area. Several months later, on November 17th, Gao was tracked down, but he chose to end his own life by shooting himself in the head as the police attempted to apprehend him. With 2 out of the 3 men dead, all eyes turned squarely to Chen Jingxing. In the pursuit of apprehending Chen, what's particularly concerning is the tangible unease, because Chen was regarded as the deadliest member of the trio. And he was about to prove it. You're listening to Heinous, an Asian true crime podcast brought to you by MediaCorp and produced by 1UP Media. This episode contains scenes of graphic imagery and violence. Listener discretion is advised. Information about Chen Jingxing's early life remains somewhat elusive, but what we've managed to uncover suggests that during his youth, Chen's behavior closely mirrored that of many boys in his era: disobedient, rebellious, and having a poor impulse control. Chen would often resort to physical violence, such as using his fists to communicate instead of his words. This early disposition likely played a significant role in Chen's gradual descent into heightened violence as he matured. Because to Chen, he must have thought that as long as there was enough force being used, he could get whatever he wanted. Following the news of Gao Tianmin's arrest and subsequent suicide, there was a collective sigh of relief among the Taiwanese people. However, this sense of relief did not extend to Chen Jingxing. Gao Tianmin died on the 17th of November, 1997. And while the whereabouts of Chen during this period remain uncertain, it is likely that he was gripped by panic, contemplating a final desperate act as a means of seeking revenge. And so on the very next day, the 18th of November, Chen brazenly entered an apartment building, firmly clutching a gun in his hand. In 1995, a South African military officer by the name of Colonel McGill Alexander participated in the Joint Staff Course at the South African Defence College. At the time, this was the course that represented the pinnacle of South African military education. In 1996, Colonel Alexander, accompanied by his family, embarked on an assignment in Taiwan. He assumed the role of a military attaché for the South African Armed Forces, which was a testament to his dedication and expertise. Military attachés like Colonel Alexander are essential figures in fostering diplomatic relationships between their home country and the host nation. Their roles encompass both liaison and communication, which involve facilitating exchanges of information, insights, and collaboration. They also serve as vital contributors to enhancing the understanding of cooperation between nations, ultimately strengthening international ties and fostering productive collaboration in various areas. Looking at Colonel Alexander's military records, it's clear that he's accomplished a lot. He's earned more than 14 medals and decorations, including the Southern Cross and 3 Good Service medals. However, it is possible that even highly decorated soldiers like Colonel Alexander may not have been entirely prepared for what was to happen next. As the evening of November 18, 1997 unfolded, the atmosphere in the Alexander household was one of warmth and familial comfort. Colonel Alexander had just returned home, and after taking off his shoes, he found himself walking upstairs where he joined in a conversation with his family. The melodious notes of the piano downstairs resonated from their talented 12-year-old, Christine. As he took a seat, 7-month-old baby Zachary gleefully bounced and laughed on his lap. In the Alexander household, this heartwarming ritual unfolded each evening as the family reunited after a long day and shared moments of joy. However, on this day, as the clock on the wall confirmed that the time had passed 7 p.m., the notes on the piano had suddenly stopped. Colonel McGill Alexander says in an interview,
"Suddenly, Christine's piano playing stopped. She came up the stairs, and that's when I realized something was really wrong, because she wasn't alone."
As Christine made her way up the stairs, the presence of an extra set of footsteps became chillingly apparent. The fear on her face was unmistakable. It was a canvas of raw, unfiltered terror that she couldn't conceal. At the top of the stairs, Colonel Alexander was confronted by the sight of his daughter standing with a man behind her. Her voice trembled as she said,
"Dad, he's one of them."
Fear had enveloped the family, and even within the familiar confines of their home, a sense of unease and dread prevailed. Colonel Alexander examined the man's face closely, and a chilling recognition settled in. Immediately, the images and posters of the deadly trio, displayed conspicuously on every street corner, haunted his thoughts and emotions. He was none other than Taiwan's most notorious and wanted man, Chen Jinqing. As the chilling reality unfolded, Alexander's heart sank as he saw Chen press a gun behind his daughter's back. In a matter of seconds, Alexander cast a careful gaze upon his family and said,
"This man is not the man to try and persuade to be nice to you. Whatever he says, you must do. Do it. Don't argue with him. Don't hesitate."
Colonel Alexander was a seasoned paratrooper, having honed his skills through rigorous special forces training. He possessed the knowledge of how to disarm an enemy and even take a life when necessary. However, facing an imminent threat took on an entirely different dimension when it was his own daughter standing before him, vulnerable, with the cold steel of a pistol pressed against her back. In an interview many years later, he acknowledges that, in that harrowing moment, the weight of the situation was magnified beyond the battlefield, as a father's instincts and love clashed with the harsh realities of his military training. Chen began to make demands that he wanted to restrain Alexander, And in those mere seconds that seemed to stretch into an eternity, he grappled with an agonizing choice.
I knew how to disarm a man and to kill him. But it's a slightly different situation when your daughter is standing in front of you and he's got his pistol against her head.
Should he choose to fight back at this moment, the risk of his daughter getting shot loomed large. On the contrary, yielding to Chen's demands carried its own grave implications, one of which was losing the chance to retaliate if Chen made any unexpected moves. Although every instinct and training he'd ever received urged him to resist, ultimately, he made the difficult choice to turn his back on Chen and allow him to tie his wrists behind his back. Chen began tying up the rest of the family, binding both their hands and ankles, with the exception of Anne, Alexander's wife, who had her feet restrained. Drawing near to Anne to restrain her hands, she clutched 7-month-old Zachary protectively, and in a straightforward manner, she asked in basic Mandarin whether he had any children of his own. No one knows for sure the thoughts that raced through his mind at that critical moment. However, there was an unmistakable pause, a moment of hesitation, as he met Anne's gaze. Chen confessed to having 2 children of his own and unexpectedly walked away, leaving Anne unbound. At this juncture, his focus shifted momentarily from the family as he walked towards the family's telephone. With his watchful eyes still fixed on the bound family, he proceeded to make a call. At the opposite end of the line, he placed calls to both the media and the police. This marked the beginning of a hostage situation, and the gravity of it became all too real. Chen demanded for international media coverage, saying,
"If you don't come around here and listen to what I've got to say, I'm going to kill these people."
Around 8 p.m., the police arrived at the residence, finding a shrouded, dimly lit house that concealed the unfolding events within. As they approached the door and rang the bell, Chen commanded them to keep their distance. Through the door of the house, the officers began to taunt and provoke him in an attempt to coax Chen into exposing himself. Their primary aim was to get a clear visual on him, as they already had orders to shoot on sight. As tensions continued to mount, an officer fired a round into the house. This triggered a rapid exchange of gunfire between Chen and the police, turning the walls into a canvas of bullet holes. Chen immediately grabbed Melanie, the eldest child, positioning her as a human shield in front of him. Alexander raised his voice, desperately urging the police to cease their gunfire. Their response, however, was unrelenting. He pleaded with Chen, offering himself as a shield in place of his daughter. But Chen dismissed it, maintaining his focus on the door, with the gun poised. From his military training, Alexander had to think of a way to keep Chen as calm as possible, because he knew that in such a situation, any further provocation would result in a potentially disastrous escalation of violence. He tried to reason with him, saying that he was physically larger and that if he had used him as a shield instead of his daughter, it would provide better cover. Chen looked directly into Alexander's eyes for a brief moment, swiftly pushing Melanie aside before grabbing Alexander over. Alexander felt relief, knowing that his daughter was no longer directly exposed to gunfire. However, this strategy had placed his own life in jeopardy. Ninety minutes into the harrowing ordeal, the arrival of Chief Ho Youyi, head of Taipei's Criminal Investigation Division, marked a turning point. Ho immediately picked up a telephone and dialed the Alexander family's number. During this crucial call, Ho assumed a different persona, becoming Big Brother Ho and addressing Chen by his triad name, Ah Chin. It was during this conversation that Chief Ho learned the motive behind Chen's actions. You see, Chen's wife, Chang Su-chen, had found herself charged as an accomplice in the murder of 16-year-old Pai Xiaoyan. She was in police custody and faced the grim prospect of up to 12 years in prison if found guilty. Furthermore, her brother had also been arrested for abetting a criminal. On the telephone with Chief Ho, Chen insisted that they were innocent and that they had been falsely accused. He demanded for justice and, in a menacing tone, warned that if his demands were not met, the lives of the Alexander family would be in grave danger. Chief Ho swiftly realized that negotiations wouldn't last amidst the continuous exchange of gunfire between Chen and the police. Therefore, he agreed to help Chen out on the condition that there would be a ceasefire. Surprisingly, Chen agreed, and for a period of time, the hostage negotiation crisis was relatively smooth sailing. Chief Ho was growing increasingly confident that the situation was under control and that the next call to Chen would mark the hostage's release. However, when he attempted to dial Chen's number once more, the call wouldn't go through. Outside the Alexander family residence, chaos reigned as hundreds of reporters, camera crews, and news channels swarmed the area. Every station in Taiwan had caught wind of the live hostage situation and descended upon the scene, pushing past police officers and trampling on barricades to capture a closer view of the unfolding events. Adding to the turmoil, the police had accommodated the media's requests, allowing them direct contact with Chen via telephone. In numerous news and radio segments, Chen was heard giving live interviews where reporters asked about his motives and what actions he intended to take if the police didn't meet his demands. This was a bizarre turn of events that seemed to have transformed the entire situation into a reality TV show. The telephone in the Alexander household continued to receive one call after another, with no end in sight, leaving Chief Ho increasingly frustrated. Around 10 p.m., Chen still hadn't picked up a call from Chief Ho. And at this point, a media team managed to breach the barriers Chen had set up earlier and entered the house. As Chen became aware of this intrusion, another round of gunshots echoed through the house. Unfortunately, the very first bullet discharged from Chen's weapon found its mark, striking Alexander in the knee. He cried out in agony, and when Anne rushed to his side, another chilling scream pierced the air within the house. Their daughter Melanie had been shot in the back. Chief Ho estimated that there were at least 100 rounds being fired between the officers and Chen. But despite the chaotic situation, he remained outside the house, continuously urging Chen to heed his words. In response, Chen carelessly stated that the two hostages were destined for an unfortunate fate regardless, and he argued that negotiations couldn't proceed due to his lack of trust in him. Chief Ho then gave Chen a grave ultimatum, warning that if any harm came to the hostages, the police would be left with no alternative but to cease negotiations and launch a full-scale assault into the home. Then, in an unexpected turn of events, Chief Ho boldly leaped through one of the shattered windows and entered the house. As he made his way up the stairs, his eyes met with Chen's figure. What he saw was a man restlessly pacing around while gripping two guns, one clutched in each hand. Taking charge of the situation, Chief Ho issued a demand for the prompt release of the two injured hostages. A tense silence filled the room as Chen, realizing that his negotiator was unarmed, reluctantly agreed. As Alexander and Melanie were aided out of the house, the media swarmed around them like a ravenous school of fish, their cameras and microphones jostling for position to capture the harrowing visuals of the just-released hostages. Back inside the house, Chief Ho argued that the 7-month-old baby should be released, as it would serve no purpose to Chen. This suggestion ignited Chen's anger, as they had only agreed upon the release of 2 hostages. In response, Chen proposed a counteroffer. The infant's freedom would be granted, but in exchange, he demanded the presence of his wife at the scene. Chief Ho recognized that Chen's demands were non-negotiable, and thus he set his plan into motion. As the night progressed, Chen repeatedly raised the gun to his chin. He wrestled with the decision to either follow the tragic path of his 2 comrades or face the consequences of his actions. The following day, at 10:40 a.m., after the hostage situation had extended into its 15th hour, the police escorted Chen's wife into the house. Several minutes later, Chief Ho is seen leaving the house, clutching the 7-month-old baby in his arms. 2 hostages, Anne and Christine, remained under Chen's control. There was only 1 final request from Chen before he would agree to surrender to the authorities. During his time on the run, Chen had sent several letters to a renowned Taiwanese human rights lawyer named Frank Xie. Upon hearing about the ongoing hostage situation, Frank immediately called his secretary to retrieve the letters Chen had sent him. After reading them, Frank felt an immense weight of responsibility bearing down upon him. He believed that Chen had placed his trust in him, and yet he had failed to live up to that trust. And so, at approximately 2:50 p.m., Frank Xie arrived on scene and was escorted into the house. Frank says on record,
"All criminals have emotional weaknesses. We can use their vulnerability in the negotiation process. For Chen, it was his love for his wife and sons. I told him that if he kept killing people, his sons wouldn't be able to hold their heads up in society. Secondly, his victims were other people's children too. It seems he hadn't thought about it this way before."
With Frank present in the house, Chen inquired about the potential consequences of surrendering, and it was Frank's brutally honest response that changed everything.
"When I told him that he'd most certainly be sentenced to death, he knew I was telling the truth."
2 hours later, at 4:30 p.m., Chen relinquished one of his firearms, and Christine was set free. Later, at 7:50 p.m., media outlets broadcast footage of Anne and Melanie leaving the house with assistance from the police. Melanie is immediately rushed to hospital, while Anne navigates her way through the throngs of reporters and journalists, sporting a calm smile on her face. Colonel Alexander vividly recalls the moment he caught sight of Anne on television while he was in the hospital. Overwhelmed with emotion, tears streamed down his face as he watched her safe exit from the ordeal. Shortly thereafter, the cameras shifted their focus to the entrance of the residence, revealing Chen in handcuffs. At the end of the hostage situation, Frank Xie pledged to Chen that he would serve as legal counsel for his wife, defending her against the charges of being an accomplice in the Pai Xiaoyan murder case. On the 23rd of September, 1999, Chang Su-chen received a 9-month prison sentence for aiding her husband in avoiding capture, a considerably lighter sentence than the initially proposed 12 years. 2 weeks later, on the night of October 6, Chen Jingxing met his fate through a solemn execution carried out by a firing squad. He was guilty of abduction, multiple homicides, and numerous instances of sexual assault. Colonel Alexander and his family made full recoveries and eventually returned to South Africa. What's truly extraordinary is that the Alexanders had openly offered their forgiveness to Chen prior to his execution, reflecting the resilience of the human spirit and the capacity for compassion, even in the face of immense adversity. Chief Ho Yu-yi went on to establish Taiwan's inaugural anti-kidnapping force, which placed a strong emphasis on utilizing negotiation strategies as a primary means of resolving hostage situations rather than resorting to violence. In 2002, he ventured into the realm of politics and steadily climbed the political ladder. He is now the mayor of New Taipei. Heinous, an Asian true crime podcast, is brought to you by MediaCorp and 1UP Media. This episode was produced and written by Guang Jin, edited by Alex, narrated by Jason, audio experience by Ethan Sam, additional engineering by Ashley from 1UP Media. Special thanks to executive producer Danny Cordy from MediaCorp. Thank you for listening. We'll see you in the next one.